everybody. Welcome to episode 4 of Three Guys in a Data Model with
Dave,
Chris,
Sonia,
and I'm Taylor. Today we're going to be taking a few steps back to talk about data architecture using an analogy that's universally familiar, the grocery store. So I'm the only one at the table today who isn't an engineer, so I'm new to data modeling anyway. And this analogy helped me to better understand why appropriate data architecture is necessary and why scale is doing the work that we're doing. So Dave, you were the one who came up with this analogy originally. Can you tell us how you came up with the idea and why the analogy is helpful?
Sure, thanks Taylor. I'm really glad we're kind of taking some time just to pull the thread on it a little bit. It's definitely coming up more and more often as we're writing papers and we're doing trainings at different companies. So hopefully we can just give an overall snapshot of where it came from and kind of how it works and how it's used. The idea originally popped up while I was working with a customer of ours, and we were out there helping them really guide them through some changes to their interfaces that they needed to make. And we kept running into some challenges and some difficulties because we were constantly needing to change the structure of the data model that was behind the interfaces themselves to accommodate the changes that we were making to the interfaces. And it was frustrating because we kind of kept, you know, almost like running in mud when we were trying to do this, because we kept trying to explain to them that, you know, the way the data model itself was structured was really the reason we were having so much trouble and the reason that it was kind of taking us a long time and we were kind of going in circles every so often. We were explaining that, you know, really the time that it would take to restructure their data model properly, we could just do that once, and then any kind of changes that we had to the interfaces beyond that would be smoothly, and we wouldn't need to spend all that time churning through the data model and changing it. And while this sounded great to them, they really had no idea. They couldn't quite grasp the idea that what we were suggesting is that the structure of their data model is not going to be exactly reflecting what the structure of their interface messages were.
Right. So a lot of times what's happening is we're all trying to express all of these nuances, we're having these nuanced conversations, and we're all using the same words as everyone else, but we're just missing each other, where we completely fail to grasp the concepts.
Yeah, and that's when I kind of went back, because I do love cooking is one of my hobbies that I love to do. So I kind of flipped back and said, okay, let's kind of get to something that maybe we're a little more comfortable with, a little bit more familiar with, and have just kind of a set place that we can start from. So I really wanted to just really take them and just have them step back from interfaces and data modeling and just really wanted to ask them a question. And basically that question, or the questions really surrounded, was, what would a grocery store be like if it was organized by recipe rather than ingredient categories the way we see them currently? So for example, there'd be an aisle for chili, there'd be an aisle for meatloaf, and maybe even an aisle for lasagna, just as an example. And now that we have that kind of in mind, why aren't grocery stores really organized in that way? You know, this is that fundamental question. We kind of are saying, okay, what if it was, but there's a reason that they're not. And that's kind of where I started kind of digging in and let that sit with them for a little bit to help them understand that.
Yeah, well, you asked that question, it kind of sucked all the wind out of the room. Mm-hmm. And in that vacuum of noise, there were light bulbs going off everywhere.
Yeah.
And what's cool is I know I've seen it, because I wasn't in that room that first time like Chris was with you, Dave, but I know I've seen it when you've talked to other people and those light bulbs go off again, because I think that it seems to me that people are so entrenched in thinking about the data model in that way, in terms of being constructed for the message, mm-hmm. that it's really hard to grasp, you know, doing it and thinking about architecting it in a very different manner.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to summarize, this analogy pretty much likens how data is organized in a data model to how ingredients are organized in a grocery store. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And it's interesting, because even if you give it kind of a fair shake of having a grocery store organized, you know, by recipe, it almost sounds like it's super convenient, right? You can go into a grocery store and you can go directly to the aisle for the specific recipe that you want, pick up one single box and walk out of that grocery store with everything that you need. And it sounds really convenient to do it that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so why wouldn't it be?
Well, so let's take that like just a little bit further and say, okay, if let's say, like we mentioned earlier, you know, we might have an aisle for chili. But if we take that a little bit further and say, well, what if I wanted Texas chili? It's a little bit of a different recipe than just a regular chili that would be in the grocery store. So then what do we have to do? Really, there's kind of two options there. One is that you need to find a completely different grocery store that has that Texas chili recipe, or you need to convince that grocery store that they need to add an aisle specifically for that Texas chili recipe.
Right.
And that's tough to do
because
in a lot of times.
Some of those ingredients are different.
Like some of the ingredients are different.
My Texas chili recipe requires cubed beef.
Yeah.
But most standard chili recipes require ground beef.
The ground beef, exactly.
So I couldn't get it in the regular chili aisle.
Right. Now, you may be able to even pull that off of getting them to add an aisle or even going to a different grocery store. But if we kind of get a little bit further and we just push that just to kind of like the nth degree of that, you know, what if that recipe that you needed was your Uncle Jeb's secret smoky and dewy sausage recipe, right? Now you're in a situation where you have this specialized, super specialized recipe. And one, you may not want the rest of the world to be able to make your recipe because it's your recipe.
Right.
But even if you didn't care and you wanted to share that recipe, how are you going to convince that grocery store to add that aisle for such a specialized piece, you know, or recipe that's there? And that's similar to what we run into when we're trying to build these models like the interfaces themselves. Everybody wants to create their interface the way they want to create them, and they want the grocery stores to match those interfaces,
right?
So that's where we're starting to kind of see that parallelism there.
So this doesn't sound like the smartest way to organize a grocery store to me, or a data model. So what is the alternative here?
Yeah, so this kind of gets back to that question of, you know, why aren't grocery stores even built that way, right? Why aren't they? And the reason is because they're really trying to serve the most numbers of customers, the most numbers of recipes out there, make it as universal, as reusable, and as expandable and scalable as they possibly can in order to accommodate everybody that's there. It's not cost efficient for them to have to keep adding on to their data models to accommodate people.
We'd end up with a grocery store that's, you know, 100 acres and
absolutely
right. We wouldn't have any room for any of the houses,
right. Exactly. And it would have no horizon of ever stopping growing, right? Because everybody's going to keep coming up with new ways to talk about data,
and it just gets messier and messier too.
Yeah. Okay,
so we're talking in the scope of this analogy, we're talking about the data model in the grocery store. So those are the two analogous pieces here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying that the way that a grocery store is organized by categories,
mm-hmm.
and the different products that belong to those similar categories are organized together.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then our recipes are how we walk through the grocery store and we say, well, I want some of this and some of that. Now, where does that recipe tie into the real world? What is that? What is the analog there?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's your whole interface set that you have there. That whole grouping of information that you want pulled together for your messages.
So the data model represents everything we know about our domain of discourse, as it were, right? And our recipes, or our messages, or our interfaces in this mm-hmm. case, these are just the bits of data that we pick out of the world
mm-hmm.
in order to look at it a certain way.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so maybe I want to know, or I want to get a recipe for chili. I might walk down the exact same aisles
mm-hmm.
that I walk down to get a, to build out my recipe for lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What the main difference there are beans versus noodles.
Right.
In a normal grocery store.
Whereas if we have something structured by messages, I'm walking through aisle after aisle after aisle just looking for where the chili aisle is.
Yeah.
And then once I get to the chili aisle, I'm looking for Uncle Jeb's super secret andouille sausage recipe.
Right. Smoky andouille sausage.
Smoky. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, well, right. Well, no, the whole that andouille sausage without the smoke's a whole different section
absolutely.
Of the grocery store.
Absolutely.
Okay, so in that, our data models historically have been organized much like this first grocery store
mm-hmm.
that we posed in the analogy.
Yeah.
Like, it's, we wouldn't do it that way, but that's what we've done for years in technology. And what Scale, along with many of our colleagues, are proposing is a new approach to building our data models, so data is built out in categories
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
with relationships that reflect basically the way things are in the real world.
Absolutely.
Because our recipes or our messages and interfaces, they don't necessarily reflect
mm-hmm.
the real world. That's just how somebody looks at it.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what are the benefits of that? Because I'm already starting to imagine, you know, reusability. There's less redundancy, certainly.
Sure. Right. Absolutely. And this really gets back to, even if we start stretching the analogy even a little bit further, and, you know, and you say you walk into the grocery store with a recipe and you go and you find all the ingredients for your recipe, that's great. But, you know, now again, if we take that the chef analogy, and the chef walks into the grocery store, the chef doesn't even have a recipe, right? So now he's exposed to all this resource of ingredients now to actually create something that maybe never would have thought of before he walked into that grocery store. That's very similar how when we start organizing it and kind of grouping and becoming a repository of all this data and all this information, the semantically, you know, related data with, like, as you were saying, with these relationships and all this grouping, you now the you know, kind of the world is your oyster, right? To walk in and say, what kind of messages can I create? Oh, there's data here that I never even knew I had access to, you know, as a developer, and now I can utilize and leverage in somewhere else in my world.
So I want to challenge you back with one thing. So now what we're talking about in this discussion is we're implicitly tying our interfaces to our data model.
Mm-hmm.
And why are we doing that? Why, because I could also just go create messages and not tie it to anything.
Well, sure. Right.
Why am I tying my message to a data model again?
Well, now once we have this tied in, and this kind of gets back to foundations, you know, of why we're even data modeling to begin with, right? It's being able to tie those messages in, being able to explicitly and without ambiguity be able to identify this piece of data in my message means a very specific thing. It means something based on how it's represented, where it's represented, what kind of context that piece of data has with other pieces of data within your system. Mm-hmm. And now it's suddenly we're having a common way to talk about a piece of data that can be agreed upon.
Okay.
And now when we're explicitly...
But it sounds like you're talking about documentation.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, so why is this different than the paper document that I get that's just documentation?
Oh, right, yeah, because I mean, normally, you know, you're getting, say, either a PDF or a stack of, you know, a couple hundred pieces of paper, right, with margin notes and about how specific interfaces and pieces of data, what they mean. And, you know, that piece now, it's reliant on, one, that piece of physical document, that artifact, right, that's going to change over time, that may be versioned over time. Like I said, could have those margin notes in them done by an engineer that, you know, retired, you know, 10 years ago. And
True story.
And now having to utilize that same information. And now when we're explicitly being able to identify that into the data model, you now no longer have to worry about or need a human to be able to hopefully understand that document correctly, hopefully read the words and put them together correctly in their mind from their viewpoint, that it means the same thing that the original author meant when they were putting it in. When we're documenting against the data model, we're saying, no, this is explicitly what the data means. There's no ambiguity in just the type of words that were used in the original documentation. But now this model becomes that documentation that can't,
so
becomes that source
of
truth.
The term that's been used before that comes to mind when you say that is a single source of truth.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Keep going back to that,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to relying on humans' interpretation of the documentation, people's memories,
mm-hmm.
Etc. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have computer leverageable data.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are things that these are documentations that computers can parse. And then the other question that I'd like to tease out is, are we talking about artificial intelligence here?
Now we quickly go there, right? Because it's
right.
Especially because it's a buzz, right? Kind of right now.
Yep.
But really, we're not going there. You know, what we're doing is we're explicitly saying there's no computer making a decision for you based on some other history or some other pattern that it's seen in data. It's actually utilizing because we are unambiguously identifying and characterizing a piece of data,
mm-hmm.
that piece of data, because it is so characterized explicitly, becomes leverageable in new ways, explicit ways that are not necessarily just guesses or results of algorithms that were run against them.
So it's not based on probabilities.
No,
and,
absolutely
and artificial
not.
Algorithms. We have actual structural maps and details that indicate this is that.
Absolutely. Mathematical translation between pieces of data where needed, and absolutely.
And then basically we're talking about using the data models for exactly the reasons that you guys are talking about. And then the grocery store is a way for us to understand how we're going to organize that
mm-hmm.
information once we have it. Because as we've seen, it looks like a lot of data models are organized like that first grocery store we talked about by recipe, which initially looks great.
Yeah.
But then we start to see as we try to scale it or make changes or that actually organizing by category, mm-hmm. like the grocery stores that we know on the street corner.
Well, and it's a great way too when you're actually writing, you're making your changes, you're writing your interfaces, or maybe you're even doing the data modeling. It's, you can immediately ask your question, what am I writing, a recipe or am I building a grocery store?
Mm-hmm.
If you ask yourselves those two questions, it suddenly then clarifies what direction you should be heading.
All right, you guys, that was a great discussion. This analogy is super helpful in better understanding the challenges that accompany the common approach to data architecture versus these best practices that you guys talked about today. Listeners, check out our other podcasts here at scale.com. And if you have questions or comments that you want to share, please feel free to drop us an email at contact@scale.com. That's SKAYL.com. Thanks for joining us, and keep an eye out for episode 5 next month.